Blog Talk Radio.
Smoke News Radio Podcast. Welcome to Smoke News Radio 2020 with your host, Jason Brodsky.
Hello, thank you. You're tuning in to Smoke News Radio. I believe it's episode 44. Tonight, there's going to be a lot of talking about the hemp cultivation in early South Carolina. This is found on an article on the ccpl.org, the Charleston, South Carolina Library System, CCPL. And it was written by Nick Butler. And it is predominantly about hemp. Sit back and enjoy. Jason Brodsky, I'm your host tonight. And welcome to Smoke News Radio. Hemp was one of many crops that nearly became a staple part of the economy in the early years of South Carolina, requiring large quantities of the weed for use in the maritime industry. The provincial government and British Parliament offered sustained cash bounties to encourage planters to cultivate hemp on a commercial scale. Their efforts showed promise, but the results were overshadowed by larger circumstances of international trade. Despite take root, the rise and fall of hemp in the 18th century South Carolina forms one of the most interesting and least remembered chapters in this state's agricultural heritage. What is hemp? Hemp is the traditional English name for a fast-growing annual plant that is a member of the botanical genus cannabis. Although it's grown in different climates around the world today, cannabis probably originated in the warm, deep habitats of Asia. Over several millennia of human intervention, a myriad of cultivated varieties of cannabis have appeared with different habits and characteristics. Despite this proliferation, all the known varieties and cultivars of cannabis might be grouped into one or perhaps two species. Early European botanists identified all common forms of hemp as Cannabis sativa. It's generally a tall, thin plant with short branches and narrow leaves. In the late 18th century, a slightly different Asian form was identified as a potentially separate species called Cannabis indica, or Indian hemp, which is generally a shorter, rounder plant with a greater profusion of leaves. More than two centuries later, scientists are still debating whether C. sativa and C. indica are truly separate species or simply different varieties of the same species. For thousands of years, humans around the world have cultivated hemp for a variety of purposes. Borrowing a pair of modern terms, we can divide the historical uses of hemp into two broad categories: industrial and medicinal. Industrial uses of hemp have traditionally focused on the plant stalk or stem, which contains stringy fibers that can be woven to make textiles or twisted and braided to make ropes of various sizes. Medicinal uses of hemp have traditionally focused on the leaves, flowers, and seeds, which contain organic chemical compounds that are known to produce various psychotropic or mood-altering effects when inhaled or ingested by humans and animals. During the rise of industrialization and the rapid growth of capital-driven commerce in the first half of the 19th century, conversations about diverging uses of hemp led to a bifurcation of terminology. English language discussions of the plant's industrial uses continued to embrace the traditional term hemp, while international discussions of the plant's medicinal value increasingly used the Latin term cannabis. More precisely, common plants in medicinal value increasingly used the Latin term cannabis. More precisely, common industrial hemp continued to be identified by the Latin botanical name cannabis sativa, while medical cannabis was increasingly marketed under the name cannabis indica. As I mentioned earlier, scientists are still unsure whether these names represent two distinct species or simply different varieties of the same species. Regardless of that academic debate, one fact remains true. The terms hemp and cannabis are synonymous and interchangeable in the historic lexicon of early American agriculture, especially in the years before the middle of the 19th century, whose leaves and flowers are known to produce psychotropic effects in humans, is the same plant that American colonists cultivated to make rope, textiles, and medicines. What does hemp have to do with South Carolina history? Hemp forms a rather small but important part of the state's agricultural history. The volume of hemp grown in early South Carolina was never as large as that of rice and only occasionally surpassed that of indigo. But knowledge of the crop's value was widespread and accepted by all levels of society and government. It is a curious phenomenon of South Carolina history that many years of generous government incentives intended to stimulate hemp production in the 18th century failed to spur a lasting tradition of investment. Hemp is now being grown legally in South Carolina for the first time in nearly a century. And as a public historian, I feel, the author, that it's important to attempt to connect these modern efforts to the earlier forgotten chapters of the state's agricultural heritage. Why was hemp cultivated in early South Carolina? The primary purpose of growing hemp in early South Carolina, as elsewhere in early America, was to produce natural fibers needed to manufacture rope cordage. Because sailing vessels once required various sizes and lengths of rope for rigging and anchor cables, hemp formed part of a suit of agricultural products necessary for shipbuilding and maintenance known in England and early America as naval stores. These commodities included timber for ship construction, masts and yards, and products derived from pine resin, including tar, pitch, turpentine, and rosin, as well as cordage made from hemp. Depending on the quality of the hemp and the quality of the processing, hemp threads can be transformed into a variety of products. The finest threads can be woven into textiles for garments and canvas for sails. Fine hemp was once commonly used for fishing lines. fishing nets, and a wide variety of household uses. Textiles made of coarser hemp yarn can be used as bagging for other goods, as well as durable floor coverings. People on a farm might grow less than an acre of hemp to supply thread, yarn, and rope for their own domestic needs. Or a planter might sow several acres of hemp with the intention of selling the crop at the market for industrial uses. The most common commercial use of hemp was in the cordage industry. Professional rope makers transformed large quantities of hemp into ropes, cables, suitable for a variety of uses, but principally in the maritime business. Because many of the ropes used in the ship rigging needed to long and strong, industrial rope making usually took place under a long, narrow shed called a rope walk. Here, long, contentious yarns were braided into small ropes, which were then braided into larger ropes and even larger cables, up to 10 and 12 inches in diameter. Most of the ropes intended for use in ship rigging were then coated with tar to make them waterproof and then coiled for ease of transportation. Manufacturers of white rope were usually small factories that made narrow gauge untarred rope for fishing, horse lines, and domestic use like Snedder family in Charleston's Rope Makers Lane. Larger establishments in North Carolina, larger establishments making maritime ropes and cables were often called black rope works because of the tar they used. Such facilities required a lot of space and dealt in combustible materials, so larger rope walks were always located on the outskirts of early American cities. Charleston had a black rope walk on the north side of what is now Reed Street by the 1740s, and one opened on the southwest side of Columbia in 1792. We'll talk in greater detail about Charleston's rope walks in future episodes. When did hemp cultivation begin in South Carolina? The earliest European settlers of South Carolina, like those in other colonies, initially planted a number of different crops in order to learn the qualities of the local soils and the seasonal ranges of the climate. By the spring of 1672, local planters were reporting back to England that the soil around Charleston was suitable to make hemp a profitable commodity. At the time, however, England had a plentiful supply of hemp obtained from some of her European neighbors. Early South Carolinians may have cultivated hemp for their own domestic use, but there was no motivation to produce large quantities for export. 17th century England procured most her hemp and other naval stores from Sweden and other allied territories bordering the Baltic Sea. That dependence was strained in the 1690s when the Swedish Empire drastically raised the prices of their naval stores. England's ability to produce cheap naval stores was then further complicated by the outbreak of the Great Northern War in 1700 between Sweden and Russia. in response to the increasing difficulty of obtaining materials that were essential to the strength of the English Navy and the nation's maritime industry in general, Parliament ratified in 1705 an act for encouraging the importation of naval stores from Her Majesty's plantations in America. That moment until the outbreak of the American Revolution in 1775, with a few years in 1720s, the British government offered generous financial incentives or bounties to encourage North American farmers to produce tar, pitch, hemp, and other naval stores in quantities sufficient for export to the mother country. In the years following the introduction of the British bounty on naval stores, the people of North and South Carolina began transforming pine trees into prodigious quantities of pitch and tar for export. Hemp was also included in the bounty scheme, but South Carolina planters were already too obsessed with rice to notice. To stimulate agricultural diversity, South Carolina General Assembly inaugurated an additional local bounty on hemp in February of 1722. Every 100 pounds weight of well-dressed merchantable hemp, the provincial government would pay 8 shillings and 4 pence proclamation money, South Carolina currency, to the producer. The purpose of this supplemental bounty was to encourage colonists to supply a want in the mother country, a sentiment at the heart of the economic concept of colonial mercantilism. Despite these dual layers of cash incentive, it appears that South Carolina planters did not pursue large hemp production in the 1720s, when the colony's first royal governor, Robert Johnson, arrived in Charleston in December 1730. He brought news that His Majesty had instructed him to encourage useful manufactures and to remind the local legislature that the Parliament had already given a discount upon hemp. Governor Johnson also initiated a scheme to expand the white population of South Carolina by creating new inland townships and offering free lands to poor Protestants from Europe who would settle them. The government hoped that many of these immigrants, including families from Switzerland, Germany, and Ireland, would cultivate crops like hemp and flax on a large scale to support the Anglo-American maritime industry. As Englishman Richard Hall came to South Carolina in the early 1730s, he was impressed by the commercial potential of hemp and flax grown in the local soils. After listening to Hall's proposals for stimulating such an industry, South Carolina legislature ratified in May 1733 an act for the encouragement of Richard Hall. Gentlemen, to forward the improvement of flax hemp in this province. That was the act. It has his name in the act. Further, the improvement of flax and hemp in the province. Foremost, as the growth and improvement of flax and hemp may improve a very considerable advantage to the people of this country, says that the act's preamble and maybe in the consequence be useful manufacture to His Majesty's Royal Navy and to the navigation in general of Great Britain, and for so much as Richard Hall, gentlemen, has been at considerable pains in trying to examine the soil of this country, which he gives us reason to believe is in many places very well adapted for the culture and production of flax and hemp, unquote. The South Carolina government agreed to pay Hall a salary of 1,000 sterling for 3 years if he would fetch 300 bushels of hemp seed and 20 bushels of flax seed and distribute them to South Carolina planters and teach them the proper methods of cultivation. Mr. Hall returned to London, asked the Board of Trade for additional money, and then went to Holland to collect the flax and hemp seeds for South Carolina. After a series of delays, he arrived in Charleston in mid-May 1734 and immediately advertised to distribute seeds and advice for free. Few planters took advantage of his offers, however, because they felt the season was already too warm to plant. Trials began in spring 1735 in Williamsburg Township, now Williamsburg County, and proved favorable. Governor Johnson expressed concerns that the cost to pay farmers $4 South Carolina currency doubled the bounty since 1723. For every 100 pounds weight of clean dressed hemp above and beyond the British bounty. Richard Hall lingered in South Carolina as late as 1738, importing hemp seeds into Charleston and distributing them among settlers of the new townships, but his efforts failed to produce a sufficient quantity for export. When a new war between Britain and Spain, then France, broke out in 1739, the so-called War of Jenkins' Ear, the business of shipping goods across the Atlantic declined sharply. Britain needed raw materials, especially naval stores, to fight the war, but traditional supplies were under threat to stimulate agricultural experimentation in South Carolina on an even larger scale. The provincial legislature ratified a new law in 1744 to offer cash incentives to farmers who would experiment with the production of wine, olive, or sesame oil, flax, hemp, wheat, barley, cotton, indigo, and ginger to distribute the incentive money more evenly across the several crops. However, the 1744 law reduced the bounty on hemp to the figure offered in the 1723 8 shillings and 4 pence proclamation money per 100 pounds weight. In response to the stimulus package and 4 pence proclamation, the stimulus package, experimenting South Carolina planters found indigo to be the most promising crop. From the late 1740s onward, rice and indigo formed the colony's two principal staple exports. After the conclusion of the long war with Spain and France in 1748, South Carolina planters settled into routines based on their familiarity with rice and now indigo. Hemp was not completely forgotten, however, and some continue to feel that it was a crop worth pursuing on a larger scale. A writer using the name Publicus in 1753 opined that hemp had much to offer to South Carolina planters. In strength, our hemp is preferred to any brought from the Baltic, and for our greater encouragement, it is brought to perfection here in much less time, with less labor and fewer hands, than rice or indigo, and the profits arising from it are reckoned equally, if not greater, than of either of these commodities, unquote. In the spring of 1756, the South Carolina legislature passed another law for the encouragement of hemp and flax that increased the bounty on hemp to the extremely generous value of 28 shillings and 4 pence proclamations money, 7 lira South Carolina currency, or 1 stira, for every 100 pounds weight of Mershnabal hemp to the market. A revision in 1762 reduced the hemp bounty by half to 14 shillings and 4 pence proclamation money. Or 70 shillings currency. And this value continued through the middle of April 1769. In the middle of the British Parliament created an additional bounty on the hemp in the summer of 1764, offering to pay 8 lira sterling per ton of hemp that arrived in Britain. These twin stimuli apparently succeeded in creating the desired surge of hemp production in South Carolina. One observer noticed that in 1766, that backcountry farmers living on the South Carolina frontier had planted so much hemp that this commodity promises fair to become... Where'd it go? The production road without visiting the treasury records. Come on. One observer noted in 1766 that backcountry farmers living on the South Carolina frontier had planted so much hemp that this commodity promises fair to become another valuable staple, unquote. Despite this upward trend, it's impossible for me to chart the rise of hemp production during this era without further research into the treasury records of the late colonial era, says the author. Besides the fluctuational value of the local bounty on hemp, the task of quantifying the volume of colonial South Carolina's hemp production is complicated by the fact that only part of the each year's crop was exported. It's easier to track the volume and value of rice and indigo during the same period because the vast majority of these crops were exported through the port of Charleston. An unknown quantity of hemp grown in late colonial South Carolina, on the other hand, was apparently sold to local rope walks and then transformed into cordage. At this moment, I don't know the percentage the crop was exported and what percentage was used locally, so export statistics provide only partial clues. One might be able to gain a more complete snapshot of annual hemp production by looking at the extant South Carolina Treasury records for this area. But the author hasn't had a chance to access those records during the recent weeks of quarantine. Nevertheless, the author's anecdotal records reveal a partial picture of the rising tide of hemp in the decade preceding the American Revolution. In the calendar year 1760, for example, the South Carolina government paid nearly 350 lira pounds currency for hemp and flax bounties, which at 1 lira per pound weight indicates a total commercial production approximately 17 tons. In 1764, the provincial government paid bounties on nearly 100,000 pounds of hemp. In late April 1969, the newspapers of Charleston reported that the South Carolina government had recently paid more than 20,000 lira currency in bounty money for the hemp crop in 1968, paying a bounty of 70 shillings currency per 100 weight. That's approximately 575,000 pounds of dressed hemp. This impressive figure was certainly smaller South Carolina annual rice crop, but it surpassed the colony's indigo crop of that same year. The General's Hemp Bounty, created by the South Carolina legislature in 1762, expired in mid-April 1769 and reverted to the value instituted in 1723, 40 shillings South Carolina currency per 100 pounds weight in November of 1969. Lieutenant Governor William Bull proudly summarized the recent success of hemp in a speech to the General Assembly. "It is with great satisfaction I acquaint you that the bounty given by you for some years past for raising hemp hath happily answered your intentions, several hundred tons having been made this year, and culture thereof will doubtless receive additional spirit from the bounty given by Parliament. The amount of hemp exported from Charleston in the spring of 1773 exceeded 66 tons, but the author does not know the figures compared to the total value of hemp bounties paid by the treasurer that year. From these few numbers, however, we can clearly see a rising tide of hemp production in South Carolina. During the 1760s and early 1770s. All right. Hope you guys are enjoying this Smoke News Radio. Reading about South Carolina hemp production tonight. Oh, wow. This is a long read. And I'm definitely getting a little winded. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes I've got to find myself a quick little breather at the people at home. So next we're going to talk about the decline of the marijuana hemp production in a moment. Oh, so yeah, smoke a whole bunch of marijuana before, during, and after your show, and you won't like cough at all during it. So, yeah. It's okay. We're getting there. That's to make things happen. Pulling pieces together. You know, you guys will see this more amazingly than just even wild and possible. You guys try to pull this together. I want to see that. You guys are talking to a phone and read something. You pull that off. I dare you. Better than trying to read your own opinion. Because you know what? You get caught in loops. People just be like, that was your opinion. I want some facts. Like, people that don't know the past, you're bound to repeat it. That's a saying. Look before you leap sometimes. You know, there's a saying. I mean, it's easier to just read something and not have to worry about trying to improvise words and come up with stuff to say. I don't got no commentary on politicians or all that stuff. I'm just trying to bring out facts that are happening out there. And there's no hemp news going on at all. Like, I got three stories. Everything is a standstill. Like, all drug trade has ceased to a large amount. The whole world is stuck at home, fiending, smoking marijuana. And still getting it somehow. Because however you know, people will be like, oh, well, that story is shorter than an ounce. You know, that wasn't cool. Where's the ounce? What's up? I need to put that ounce in my hand. Boom, half pound. Like, things aren't reading right. So, what's the world to you? I don't know. I just know my smoke consumption of the world, and that because marijuana is so taxed, you got to find other ways to get it. Because if you're paying $50 every 2-3 days for weed, it sucks. And you need it for whatever reason you claim. You say you want to justify. Well, what's my justification? I don't feel the issues in my neck. I mean, like, dude, if I could afford dabs every day. I mean, I can't just sit there and be catatonic. I ain't going to be catatonic. I'm going to take this monster dab. Chill me for a while after, like, all my neck muscles just relax. So, this is just a little smoke a joint kind of moment in between the next South Carolina. So I'll just keep kind of reading it. You know, why did hemp production decline in South Carolina? The sustained program of government incentives convinced planters across the landscape of colonial South Carolina to try growing hemp. And then to produce sufficient quantities to operate the rope walks in Charleston and to export to rope walks in England and the neighboring colonies. With the coming Revolution War, 1775, however, both the provincial and imperial bounties disappeared, cut off from her traditional maritime trade with Britain. South Carolina and other colonies needed hemp and other naval stores more than ever. Agricultural production was difficult. Staying in a landscape that doubled as a battlefield, so American merchants and diplomats sought new European channels for trade. After the conclusion of the war in 1783, hemp production resumed in South Carolina and elsewhere. Without cash incentives to encourage its cultivation, however, the volume of hemp produced in this state declined sharply. Charleston's rope walks of the late 18th century and early 19th centuries relied principally on large quantities of hemp imported from the northern states and from Russia. the final nail on the hemp came in the 1790s, when the beginning of a commercial bonanza around cotton left hemp in the dust. The advent of steam-powered rope walks in Old England and New England put the last of Charleston's rope walks out of business in the 1820s. The limited success of hemp production in early South Carolina was a result of peculiar market forces that dominated South Carolina economy during the first two centuries of this state's history. The planters of colonial era South Carolina competed directly with other American farmers to find a British market for their agricultural commodities, and they claim the government subsidies designed to encourage the production of certain goods to maximize their profits in a crowded market. South Carolina planters focused their efforts on crops like rice and indigo that their northern neighbors were unable to grow because of differences, climate, and topography. Conversely, early South Carolina planters spent far less energy cultivating crops than northern and middle Atlantic colonies grew up in profusion. Like wheat, barley, tobacco, and hemp. Next question is, what's the legacy of hemp in South Carolina? Legacy of hemp in South Carolina. The soil and climate of South Carolina are certainly conducive to the production of hemp, and historically speaking, there are certainly local and international demand to manufacture rope and maritime cordage in the early centuries of this state. Despite these advantages, the ample supply of both raw and finished cordage in the larger Atlantic marketplace ultimately discouraged South Carolina farmers from investing heavily in this cultivation. From the beginning of the colony in 1670s to the early 20th century, many farmers grew a bit of hemp to satisfy their own domestic needs, but the basic forces of supply and demand generally restricted the scale of their investments. The botanical differences between cannabis sativa and cannabis indica was relatively inconsequential until the middle of the 19th century, when manufacturers of patent medicines began marketing elixirs containing the liquid extract of what they identified as cannabis indica. Common hemp used for industrial purposes continued to be identified as cannabis sativa during that era. As the regulation of medicines and drugs became more rigorous and institutionalized during the early decades of 20th century, the United States government labeled cannabis indica as a narcotic conservative Americans waged a political war against the drug during the 1920s and 1930s, using the Spanish name marijuana to insinuate that its influence was un-American. In its efforts to eradicate the recreational use of cannabis in the second half of the 20th century, the United States government deployed blunt laws that also prohibited the cultivation of hemp for traditional and industrial and medicinal purposes. In recent years, people involved in various efforts to rehabilitate the reputation of cannabis have adopted the phrases industrial hemp and medicinal cannabis in reference to the different uses of what is essentially the same plant. In the spring of 2019, the South Carolina General Assembly ratified a law to permit the cultivation of industrial hemp, and the state's Department of Agriculture is now accepting applications for permits to grow the ancient crop. A new day has dawned for South Carolina farmers, but it's not entirely a brave new world. If our soil had a memory, I'm sure it would recognize these familiar seeds. Although it would be unfamiliar to some and unwelcome by others, hemp has deep roots in South Carolina. This was from CCPL, the South Carolina Library, by Nick Butler. Here we go. He has a time, he says, like 29 minutes, but he doesn't equate like having a joint in between. He's like, you know, 29 minutes, you add the joint time, and there you go. Man, I hate talking about all this stuff. So lame. We need to have customs. You know what? There is. How do we go back over there? What do? We dance. Dance, computer. Dance. Okay. So, there was a whole bunch of quotes on 420, like way more I could read than in the next 12 minutes about people that are running for Congress. And also positions on 420, the marijuana moment made a giant list of all politicians. Their little tweets. So it's just like, people just do what you do. So here's what they said. The first one I said like way earlier, and so I pretty much ended right before I got to this guy. There might be someone else or two right before him, but this guy's name is Jason Call, and the host that you're listening to is Jason Brodsky. So cool. Yeah, right? And you're on Smoke News Radio, Mr. Call. Each individual person we will call next, you just watch. So basically, Mr. Call, he's Jason Call for Congress, WA02, Congress. It's 420 all day today, which TBH makes it about the same as yesterday. Hash criminalized cannabis in 420 day. Then 420 justice is not just about decriminalizing weed. It's about restorative justice for millions of lives destroyed. It's about emitting our legal system, and policing is inherently and historically racist. Release, expunge, repair. And then on 420 day, we should celebrate the healing benefits of marijuana. Samus Lopez at Samus Lopez, New York, Bronx. On 420 day, we should celebrate the healing benefits of marijuana. Its life-saving properties should be researched and promoted. Yet 4 out of 10 neighborhoods in New York City for marijuana arrests are in the Bronx. The war on drugs disenfranchises communities and tears families apart. This is on 420. All these people said this. So it is meant to harass and attack black and brown folks. Let's legalize marijuana and decriminalize drugs. And then we must pass Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. Ensures legalization is tied to racial and economic justice. Let's meet the needs of our community and direct reinvestment towards those most harmed by the drug laws. Next, from Kasim Rashid for Congress, marijuana rockers should be expunged. Marijuana should be decriminalized and legalized. Incarcerated citizens should be allowed to vote. These three actions don't cost a penny. They repeal racist policies that target people of color. They strengthen our democracy. And they unstrengthen. I think that's what he's trying to say. Also, by the way, anybody doing anything in federal is not really helping anymore. It's all state. I mean, federal, yeah, Congress, I love it. You know, yay, now it's federally, but the state's like, no. U.S., the House is like outside of, it's like the federal. It's all federal stuff. These guys, cool candidates, here we go. Andrew Valinsky, I support legalizing marijuana. I'm not afraid to talk about it. Any legalization bill must include expunging records and begin to lay the framework for a fair tax system for local growers. Stephanie Smith for governor. Proud to have the only major party candidate for governor to publicly support full cannabis legalization. Happy 420, y'all. To Jenna Wadsworth, it's time. Join me in the fight if you agree. Okay. 420, let's recognize cannabis legalization for the opportunity is to support farmers, create a more equitable society, provide economic medicinal relief for communities who need it. Jenna Wadsworth legalized it. Then Elizabeth Orens of, oh, this is insane. Like, oh, there's local somewhere. Just got to look it up. Okay. Here's some facts. Black people are the most 4 times likely to be arrested for possession for marijuana, even though the rates at which most are comparable. Fueling mass criminalization, crisis over incarceration. Support legalizing marijuana and ending the racist war on drugs. And Joe Moody said he'll be joining a Texas Normal session. And then Montana marijuana activists weigh appeal after courts reject electronic signatures for legalization. And it's probably not going to let me get that one. But that's back in Montana. Let's see if that wants to come through. Because that's the thing is, then we can get electronic signatures right here. California is also trying to get the electronic signatures. Like, you know, now you're getting just like, what do you mean? How do we get a video electronic signature? Hi, look, I'm dancing on a video signing this in front of something. Look, there's a picture of me doing this, easily legible, verifiable by a human. You know, real simple. Like, what's the world coming to? I don't know. You just make sure that you just got a lot of heart and love in the universe, and that's all that really matters. The world is the most beautiful place that there is everywhere. So, other things, you know, the hemp shipping companies, CBD, reduction, shipping obstacles, you know, things are actually shipping in the world People haven't gotten that. It's a big excuse for people to buy stuff. Oh, we can't get things here so easy. Like, no, things ship. You just got to get, like, you know, your tracking number on that stuff and figure out what its cost is, and things are chill in the world. Dude, don't overreact. Be good. Be healthy. Stay healthy the best you can. Marijuana, by the articles say marijuana does not cure, like, whatever dangers that attacks you. Like, it might make you feel better, probably, sure, and all. You know, so don't think that, you know, if I'm in the hospital, they say, I gotta dab 40 dabs. Well, I say dab 40 dabs regardless. Still, at the hospital, you have to dab. That's because it's not smoke. It's just vapor. And you just blow it at the fan or wherever, you know. It's just real, 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 real chill. Because it's dabs. And everybody needs to smoke some dabs. And if you're smoking a lot of dabs, you're chill. You have some N-acetylcysteine. Break up all the phlegm in your system. You know, don't eat monkeys from the African jungles. Oh, that's a different virus. Sorry. Different virus. You know, don't share joints. It's a different virus. Oh, wait, everybody already has that virus. HPV. Don't dig that your HPV. Everybody already has that. If there's everybody already has all these viruses, just seem to be like viruses have been a part of our existence. So complete eradication of them breaks our ability to fight them. And so we have to keep up our ability to fight these, even though it's like we can't fight the genomic virus. I get it.
You're good, Jack. Give us a good one.
Jack Darren is dead.
A billion people die. Not so many cried at the devil's side. Well, Mama said, it's just make believe. You can't believe everything you see. So, baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news tonight. Who's the one to decide that it would be alright to put the music behind the news tonight? Well, Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. So baby, close your ears on the news tonight, on the news tonight. The unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And Mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eye. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullabies.